For the ninth year in a row, Reading FC fans enter a new season with dreams of climbing Mount Olympus and returning to the Premier League. Will Vukopanovic's squad produce a Herculean effort to finally clamber into the promised land, or will the conspiring forces of a thin squad, injuries and financial burden prove to be the Royals' Achilles heel? Welcome to the Tarlesen Podcast, episode 266. I'm your host, Mark Mayer, and we are a podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans. If this is your first venture into this wilderness of footballing thoughts, welcome. Over the course of the season, we'll be bringing you weekly podcasts analysing the Royals' match action, the latest news from around the club, and the odd exclusive interview. And if this is not your first trip around the sun with the Tarlesen Podcast, you can expect more of our usual nonsense and waffle. And who better to bring in at this moment after that sentence than Ben Thomas joining us, the view from the Dolan. How's it going, mate?
I'm very well, thanks, Mark. Yeah, it's been interesting this summer, really. Obviously, the Euros was hit and miss for Wales from my point of view. But yeah, apart from that, I'm kind of really eager to get back into it, really, and get back to the ground and hope for a really positive season ahead.
Yeah, it feels weird in a way having to talk about a domestic football again after, as you say, the Euros and the Olympics. I was watching some climbing finals earlier. And you kind of think, maybe I could do this every week. But then I guess that's just the thing about football. It always draws us back in. It's always the one sport, for a lot of us at least, that we have to keep coming back to and hoping for the best. And this is the sort of time of the year that we really do hope for the best, I think. And before we go into the summer summary and we go on to talk about the transfers and everything that's gone on over the summer for Reading, I want to thank, as per usual, our Patreon subscribers who continue to put their hand in a pocket for a few little tips and tricks here and there. Hopefully, we've got a couple of ideas in the pipeline that hopefully we'll be able to share with you soon. And our sponsors, ZCZ Films, who are joining us for another season. Always very happy to have them on board. And, well, without further ado then, let's go into the recap.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Recapping the summer, Ben, it probably won't take too long, to be honest, because it's not been a very busy time for Reading fans. Michael Elise and Thierry Neves sold. Aluko and Baldock, the headline, released players. Omar Richards gone on a free. In terms of incomings, watch this space, really. It's been, for transfers, I think actually, when we are in an interesting position financially, which I'm sure everyone knows about, but if you look across the Championship and even the Premier League, it's been a pretty quiet summer.
Yeah, I think where we are now as a club is kind of the culmination of quite a few years of sort of absolute mismanagement off the pitch, really. We're completely hamstrung and hindered by financial fair play at the moment. Obviously, as fans, we get a picture, but we're not really, anywhere near understanding of the discussions and the conditions that we're currently under as a club. But my frustration really is why this has taken so long to get sorted, because we're kind of in the same financial situation that we were at the start of the summer. So why have these discussions taken so long to get sorted? And we're kind of, we're 2 days away or 3 days away or whatever from the first game of the season, and we've got sort of 17, 18 recognised players. So that's kind of a real concern, really. I think in terms of the outgoings, there's no major shocks there, really. Obviously, we knew Omar was leaving in, January, February time. Kind of became the worst-kept secret in football, really, which almost became a bit of a running joke for us on this podcast. But, from Elise's point of view, it's good money. It's just not enough for the talent and the quality that he had. And again, there's been a lot of criticism of the club sort of in the off-season about, having foresight and making sure these players were tied down. But I don't think anyone really would have anticipated Richards to have the kind of the season that he had with us this past year. And also Elise, obviously raw talent at the time that he signed a contract with us. But again, no one would have anticipated that he would have kind of, explode onto the scene quite as much as he did. So it's frustrating in one way to lose those players. But from a kind of, from a club point of view and from where we've been, actually makes you quite proud that you feel like these players are going to go and kick on and hopefully leave a legacy for younger players coming through. So I think there's still a lot of work to do to get the squad where it needs to be. I feel like, you know, we do need to get some extra bodies in, which we'll obviously talk about later on. But yeah, there's reasons to be optimistic, but also I can kind of understand some of the frustration around the club currently amongst the fan base at the moment.
Well, let's talk about the players who might be benefiting from this scenario. And those are the academy players who kind of around the squad last season, but you could tell that Paunovic didn't trust them. You have to hope that he was right not to trust them then and is right to trust them now. So there's Femi Azeez, looks like he's going to be involved this year. Ethan Bristow, the left back. Gerald Dorset, centre back, has kind of been in and around the friendly so far. Dejan Tetek, the centre mid. Mamadi Kamara on the wing. And Kevin Avechoman, the striker. Of, you know, only maybe two or three of those we'll see. Maybe we'll see more of those. But I can't think, Ben, the last time there's been as good an opportunity for academy players to come through. Probably the Steve Clarke season when we got to the FA Cup semi-final. There were a few academy players involved then. But before that, I think it's probably the Brendan Rodgers season when we had, like, we just, you know, missed out on the playoffs. A few players have been sold, just as we are in now. And the likes of Jem Karachan, Alex Pearce really came to the forefront in that kind of period, didn't they? And maybe that's something that we have to cling on to now.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, it's very difficult because obviously with some of the injuries we've got, so Mate being the obvious one to talk about, I mean, he leaves a massive hole there on the right-hand side. And you'd look at the players that you just mentioned, you think, well, Azeez will kind of slot in there and he should be at least in the squad, if not the starting 11 on Saturday. So he's the first one really that we can talk about. I think he's, you know, of the games that I've seen this pre-season, he looks quite bright. He looks like he's kind of showing that, you know, raw talent that Elise maybe showed this time last year as well. So he will be the one to watch, certainly. And you know, let's just hope that he's got a nice contract around him, really. I think in terms of the other ones you mentioned, you know, again, Bristow would be the one that you'd probably look at. I like the guy up front whose name I can never, ever pronounce, and you did it absolutely professionally just a minute ago.
Well, I probably got it wrong, but I do think, I mean, I feel bad for Avechoman, and obviously if I've just said it wrong, but also we do kind of need, you know, I think we've had it with players like N'Golo Kanté have come out and said, this is how you actually pronounce my name. And
yeah,
I have a
exactly.
Bit of sympathy because people always misspell my name, so it's a little bit different, but I do think maybe the club, if there's an introduction to the lads so he can kind of come out and you know, help us out a little bit.
You need that thing that BBC Berkshire do where they kind of, hi, I'm John Swift and I'm playing, you know, centre mid there, whatever. But yeah, we need that for him really. But he could have an opportunity sooner than we think because, you know, we're looking quite short up front at the moment. You know, Puskas realistically, I mean, will he be here at the end of August? I don't know. It depends how desperate we get. You know, Zhao obviously was injured at the end of last year and then kind of tailed off before that anyway. So we're crying out for someone up front. So he could be the one that could surprise us all and really take, you know, take the team by storm, really. But there are some positives and there are some good players coming through. And I think we spend so long talking about the academy and the kind of the lack of impact prior to, as you said, kind of the Brendan Rodgers era. And we're starting now to see players that are coming through and almost kind of reveling in the fact that they know they're going to get an opportunity here at Reading. Now, whether or not they stay with us kind of is irrelevant because they're going to get their grounding here and they're going to get games and they're going to get valuable experience in a highly competitive league. So there's a lot of players, as you mentioned, that are around the team, and it's whether or not A, they're going to get the opportunities, and B, when they do, they're going to take them, you know, such as Elise and Richard did last year. Tetek, I'm excited about, but you know, from a first 11 point of view, I don't see how he gets in the team, quite frankly. So yeah, the two really that I'm excited about are Azeez and Bristow, certainly from a starting point of view in the initial part of the start of the season.
Well, Bristow's our only left back, so it'll be interesting to see whether McIntyre gets the nod, given that Moore and Morrison seem to be ready for the centre back positions. I'd imagine it probably will be McIntyre against Stoke. Well, as you mentioned Puskas there, and I think that's a really interesting player to kind of move on. Actually, before I do that, I'll give you the pre-season results, just in case anyone's missed them. We beat Lincoln 1-0, lost 1 or 3-0 to West Ham, I think it's 3-0. Charlton 1-0, Crystal Palace 3-1. We also beat Brighton in a kind of weird pseudo-training ground friendly, apparently. They're pre-season results, they don't really matter, but I thought I'd just rattle them off for you in case you've not been caught up. But yeah, as you mentioned Puskas there, I think there's a good chance to talk about whereabouts we think Reading are going to finish. We'll do the transfers in a little bit, but let's start from the bottom. do Reading have the squad and the manager to beat relegation? And even if players like Puskás are still going to be pretty average this year, you have to think that with Zhao, Moore, Swift, Raphael, that kind of spine and the players that we know around them, relegation really shouldn't be an issue this year, should it?
No, and I think when I was, you know, thinking about this and did the predictions for the round table that will come out later today or tomorrow from the site, I think that I've rolled off at least six teams that I think are worse than us. Whether or not that's from a financial situation or from a squad depth point of view or just general quality. And these are in no particular order, and I apologise to any fans that listen to this or those clubs. But, you know, Derby, Hull, Peterborough, Blackpool, Coventry, Huddersfield, I would say are all worse off than we are in terms of quality and squad depth. So you would imagine that we would have enough to finish at least above those six. Now, with those clubs, you know, Derby in particular, obviously there was a tweet that came out today from Alan Nixon of The Sun who mentioned that Derby players were turning up and just signing contracts without any figures on, which is a desperate situation to be in. And I don't think without this getting into a kind of a really negative situation, or we're not as bad as them, but we're not in that kind of ballpark just yet. You know, Hull obviously haven't really added too much. Peterborough again will be the perennial strugglers because they seem to just come up and down. Blackpool not been in this division for a little while. Coventry, be interesting to see how they kind of settle back into their proper home. And obviously Huddersfield as well, who didn't end the season particularly well at all. So there's at least six clubs that I can count that won't be, you know, that won't be sort of far off the relegation places. Chuck in teams like Preston, who I think will probably struggle as well. You could find that Swansea might have a kind of an iffy season, and Bristol City. So I think we're above those teams, definitely. It's whether or not we will be able to, as you said, cope with any issues in the squad in terms of injuries or, you know, God forbid, any sales before the end of August. So I think my honest answer is we have enough to stay up. I just don't know where else we'll end but beyond that, really.
Well, that's the question, isn't it? Is obviously if we're in agreement that, and I certainly think the relegation, Paunovic in itself, he can keep the defence ticking over. He can make sure that we're not, you know, floundering constantly, or hopefully at least. So what does it take for Reading to get into the playoff mix then? What do we need? I think the two words, I think we'll all agree that we need more squad depth. I think that's pretty obvious, unless all of the academy players that I just mentioned turn out to be, you know, top class championship players, which, let's face it, that's not realistic. I think depth is obvious, and goals as well, I think, is the other thing, because that defence, you know, can look after itself. Last season, it did have a few iffy games, but generally speaking, I don't think anyone came out of the season saying we conceded far, far too many goals. For me, it's that scoring goals, obviously Lucas Shaw, chances of him having another sort of career season, it doesn't seem to be that great, particularly how he finished last season. Yaku Mate is injured for the first few months of the season. Then we're kind of relying, I think that there are two players that have the potential, but we've not seen it yet, to bring Reading into that and have a, you know, to really break out. And that's Ovi Ajari and George Puskás. If one or both of those players can be the player that have, you know, we semi-believe they can be, and, you know, have that sort of 15 goals, 20 goal season, etc., then we kind of got a chance. But I think that's really the only way we can do it right now.
Yeah, I mean, those two definitely sprung to mind. I think going back to what we need to do to get in the playoffs, I don't think Paunovic is going to have any issues motivating this team at all. I think they're going to be hurt by what happened last year. I think, again, last year came down to squad depth and just a little bit of naivety from the manager in terms of being flexible and needing to change things up when needed. Namely, as we said time and again on this podcast, substitutions. I think he needs to be more open to that and quicker to react to situations. He's going to come up against some very, very astute managers in this league this year, probably the strongest set of managers that this league's ever seen. You know, you mentioned your Warnocks, your McCarthy's. Obviously, Parker's got a point to prove. You know, Janovic at Sheffield United. So, you know, there's a lot of managers that he's going to come up against. And he's really going to have to bed in and think very carefully about how he wants the games to go. I think in terms of the two players that you mentioned, in terms of Puskás and Ajari, I'd throw Swift in there as well, because we have to get 30 plus games out of him this year for us to be anywhere near in contention for the playoffs. He for us, or he for me, is our star man, and he's the one who's got that real kind of resilient quality. So I'm hoping that will be kind of a big catalyst for him to be able to take charge of this team from a creative point of view as well. But I just don't see us having enough quality when you look at the top end of the championship to be able to break into the top six. You know, there's probably a core of four teams that I'd look at. Sheffield United, particularly Bournemouth, I think those two will go up automatically. And then you've got sort of Fulham and West Brom lurking. Chucking the fact that I think Cardiff will do very well. And I'm literally shaking as I say this, but QPR, I think we'll have a good season as well. So, you know, already there's six teams that I think will end up higher than we are. So it's going to be very, very difficult. And unless we can get, as we've said time and again, the reinforcements in the next couple of weeks, it's going to be very, very difficult for us to compete over the course of the season with definitely those six teams.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point about the managers. I'll throw in Chris Hughton's name as well at Nottingham Forest. Rule them out at your peril, because he's just a good manager. And people like Tony Mowbray, Blackburn, I don't think they're going to be up there this season, particularly if they're about to sell their best player. But you turn up at these places and they don't roll over for you. They know what they're doing, and that's very difficult for Reading. And yeah, QPR, I was just going to ask what teams were worried about. We kind of come on to it anyway, but QPR finished last season very well. Reading fans might end up shooting over some sort of envious glances at QPR in the next few months, because they've kind of gone back to their roots a little bit and formed a bit of a solid foundation with some young players and not spending too much money, and may just be setting out a kind of blueprint if they have a good season. But that's the thing about the Championship, isn't it, is that there were 12, 14 teams, we could say, in that. You mentioned Cardiff. I don't particularly think they're particularly a team to worry about. But because we have... And it comes down to money, sadly, and I hate to always bring it back to this, but you've got four teams in particular, the ones you mentioned, the three relegated teams in Bournemouth, the teams with the parachute payments and the teams who have recently been in the Premier League are at such a huge advantage to go and build a squad and build the depth and have the quality as well. And I think that it pains me to say it, but I do think that those four teams are probably the ones to look out for most. So in terms of them, let's move on to the mailbag in just a second, but just as a marker, where will, not obviously where we hope, but where will we finish this season?
In all the predictions I've done and the articles I've done, I've said 12th, and that's what I hope for. Anything north of that would be, where we are now, a great season. I don't care whether that's tin pot or unrealistic or not ambitious enough for some people, but the point is we are where we are. And this time last year, you know, I said that we would narrowly avoid relegation. Obviously, I was proved wrong massively, which was fantastic. I don't want to be around the sort of the bottom five, the bottom six come Christmas time. You know, I want to be kind of fairly clear of those. And anything that we get above 12th would be, for me at this current point in time, a great season. I think there are definitely sort of teams that are worse off than us, and for that reason, I would settle and be very, very happy with a dead on mid table finish.
Yeah, well, I think I'd be just about happy enough with that, depending on how the season pans out. My kind of crystal ball shot in the dark is ninth, on the basis that I think we'll start quite slowly, but hopefully as the young players bed in, hopefully, you know, maybe January, things a bit easier to get some reinforcements in. And also, we're going to talk about in mailbag, a few players who are supposedly out of contract at the end of the season. Players start playing for their contracts and futures, then we might end up finishing the season quite strongly, although I don't think it will necessarily be enough to be in the playoffs. So let's jump into then to the mailbag and find out what you're asking us ahead of the new season.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
Matt Williams kicks us off then with two quick questions. He says, when do you think we'll be going into a season where FFP isn't leading the topic of conversation? And he also says, fascinated to see that in When Saturday Comes preview, fans of 14 of 24 clubs predicted their team to finish lower mid-table. Yeah, that's awful. Who would ever do that? don't listen to what we just said. And why do you think this is? Do you think we'll therefore see another year where the gap between the top six and the rest is so stark? Well, I mean, that second point, yeah, I didn't actually realise that that was the question until after I'd predicted that we'd finish ninth. But that, I think that is exactly the thing. 14 clubs in the Championship are roughly the same quality. No one's particularly arrogant to think we'll stroll into a comfortable playoff position or whatever, but also no one thinks their team's that bad to slip out of the league. And that's how the Championship has been for the past 2-3 years now. And as he mentions with the money, that ain't going to change, because teams like Preston, QPR, Reading are going to find it so difficult when, you know, let's say next season we've got Norwich back down or Newcastle or whatever, that they'll just be the favourites again because they've got so much more money. So yeah, I suppose the question to focus on then, Ben, is when do we think that we'll go into a season where FFP, or profit and sustainability as it's known in the Championship, isn't a topic? Probably either when the club folds or the sun becomes a red dwarf and engulfs the earth.
pretty damning omens there, aren't they, really? I think going back to the point about the 14 teams thinking they'll finish in mid-table, I think there's just a massive flattening of quality in mid-table. I think, you know, there are going to be three teams that really get cut adrift. Obviously Derby's one of those, as I've said. I think Peterborough will be one of those, and probably Huddersfield, I would imagine. But then you've got teams kind of that are just going to be happy to stay in the division and kind of consolidate. And we're kind of, unfortunately, one of those teams at the moment. That's where we are. No team really in the Championship is making a lot of money. The teams that have just come down from the Premier League, as you say, in terms of the parachute payments. It's very, very difficult to predict, because, you know, any team on their day in this league can win. And they can scrape to get the points and the results. So it's going to be a real slog. There's not any real teams that in that mid-table chunk that are going to stand out in terms of quality on paper at the moment. So it's going to be really hard. In terms of the financial fair play, I mean, it would be great to talk about signings that we're making and having disagreements amongst the fan base about whether or not we think they're good or not. I mean, Pernovic has not had, to my knowledge, a permanent signing in nearly a year of being in charge, and that's crazy to think about that. So, you know, he brought in loans last year. They did an all right job. You know, some were better than others, but it's very telling that neither of them have, or none of them that we've had, have stayed. So I think every fan currently connected to us at the moment wants to be in a situation where we're not talking about money and we're not talking about finances and we're not talking about, you know, going into a pre-season worrying about a points deduction, because that's the worst thing, really. And I think one of my main concerns this year, and this might sound a bit bizarre to some people listening, is that the owner leaves before his time. Whether or not it's his fault or whether or not he's paying for kind of past financial indiscretions of the club is kind of irrelevant at this stage. My problem is that the EFL are kind of almost deliberately hindering the progress that we're trying to make. And at some point, I just feel like Dai Young's just going to go, no, I've had enough of this, and throw in the towel, and we're going to be in an even worse situation. So at least at the moment, we have, whether or not it's a good plan, we have a plan in place, and the club seemingly have a plan in place to try and get us out of this. But it's going to take probably more player sales, and it's going to take kind of cheaper incomings, and we're going to find that difficult over the next couple of years. So I don't see this financial situation going away anytime soon. It's a lot of money that we've got to claw back, and it's a situation that we've really got to convince the EFL of that we're on top of, and that we can manage, and we're not losing money to the tune of, what was it, 850 grand a week, something like that. So, you know, that really is concerning for us as fans, but also, you know, clearly as a footballing body, they're worried about that too.
Yeah, I mean, my serious answer in terms of the FFP stuff is it will change, or at least the rules will be adjusted somewhat when the EFL feels like the risk of clubs overspending and going bust or whatever, or, you know, kind of doing a Derby, or even doing like what clubs like Wolves have done in the past and spend loads of money to get up and then kind of get away from it. It's when that risk is less important than the risk that we are creating a kind of 25, maybe 30 team upper Premier League tier of clubs that just constantly recycle, and that the other, what it'll be like 65 clubs in the Football League just have no chance of progression whatsoever. That's when they'll decide that FFP doesn't do them any favours anymore, because it will just create such a disparity between the clubs that that you know are below the Premier League, and that's probably when the EFL will decide enough's enough. We're not actually doing ourselves any favours anymore. Not really moving the topic on too much, unfortunately, but it's a good question nonetheless. Sean Burgess asking, who is most to blame for the fact that Paolo has been unable to sign a single player on a permanent transfer since joining? Or I suppose that's for a fee, isn't it? Is it the owners / Ron Gourlay putting us in this position? The EFL, all of the above? Luke Redman adding, how can FFP work when we've lost two players for £8 million when we really should have got about £25 million for, which is a fair point. Whether you particularly agree with it or not. So I think that it is ultimately on Reading's back. It's because we've not been promoted, basically. If we'd have spent this money and got promoted, no one would have cared. But it is ultimately on Reading's back. The Football League, we can probably do an entire podcast on how they've messed up in particular situations. But, you know, for Reading, I don't think there's too much point getting angry at the Football League, because you can look back over basically the past decade since we got relegated from the Premier League in 2013. We have not sold players well. We've not bought players brilliantly. And we've not done the wages and the contracts brilliantly either. And all that's conspired to not get promoted, and therefore we're in this situation. And yeah, you take away a couple of those components, we're probably fine. But all that together, and obviously the rules, you know, you can't really, I don't think you can really complain.
And it's a really good question from Sean, because actually when you strip it back and you think about it, there's so many people that you could, you know, in inverted commas, blame. I think Gourlay is the easy one, because he not only mismanaged the contracts and the finances, but basically destroyed the ethos of the club in a very short space of time. And for me as a fan, that's why I have resentment towards him for that. But I think, you know, you're right in pointing out the fact, since we last got relegated from the Premier League, there's just been a succession of people at the club that have listened to the wrong people and gone down the wrong path. And as a collective responsibility, and with a constant change in ownership during that time, there's not really been a plan in terms of actually this is what we want to do to get back into Premier League. This is what we want to do to be sustainable and within the rules of the EFL and the Championship. So there's a whole host of people. I mean, it's kind of slightly foolish to be annoyed at the EFL because they set the rules. I think the frustration is when you've got clubs higher up the pyramid spending obscene amounts of money, and particularly with, you know, nothing against Fulham, but with the Harry Wilson fee, you know, the fact that they're not paying that for another year so that both clubs can avoid any kind of penalties for financial fair play. I just think that's a little bit difficult to swallow from our point of view when you're talking about, you know, figures like 12 million. It is very, very difficult, and there's plenty of blame to go around. But I just think now that the concentration needs to be on doing what they physically can to kind of bulk up the squad with the best available quality they've got on the budget that they will be, you know, allowed to have sanctioned by the EFL. So it is a really good question. And as you said, we could talk about this forever, but my kind of short answer to what Sean was asking was that it's a combination of people at our football club that have led us to this point.
Yeah, I think that I'm tempted to come back to this in News Bites, where we'll actually talk about transfers and where we prioritise signing players, stuff like that, because the transfer, there is a bit of news, which we'll do in News Bites and kind of get into that a bit more. Hugh's asking, how many of the current academy players do you think can step up to feature in a minimum of 30 games this season? As without additions, our depth is looking very worrying. I think we kind of covered that at the start. I think we both agreed kind of Aziz and Bristol have the best shout, maybe Tetek as well. In terms of 30 starts, I don't think any of them, but 30 sub-appearances or a combination of is certainly on the agenda for three of those, maybe more. Kyle Smith saying, of all the players that are contracted at the end of the season, who do you think is most crucial or critical that we tie down to a new contract? And who do you think will realistically tie down to a new contract? Now, it's difficult with this situation because the club and, you know, clubs in general are not always brilliantly transparent in terms of telling us what is going on with players' contracts. Case in point, Michael Morrison's deal was out of expired in June, but then the club said that there was an option that the club and the player could agree on to extend it by a year. Now, I don't think anyone knew about that. So Transfer Market currently have John Swift, Andy Winamotta, Josh Laurent, Andy Yeardom, Tom Holmes, Raphael, Mark McNulty, Michael Morrison, Felipe Aruna and Yaku Meite as all out of contract at the end of the season. But I would add a very big note of caution on that. We don't know what these deals say. You know, Lawrence could have an extension clause. Arunas could say if you play five games, you get another year. You know, whatever. But those are the sort of players that we're talking about potentially having to lose. Funnily enough, talking about Ron Gourlay, when he gave Yaku Meite a new deal a few years back, everyone was saying, he's only just signed a new deal. Why does he need a new one? Well, I guess it's given us this. So maybe it isn't the worst thing in the world. But of those, Ben, who worries you most?
I mean, all of them, probably. I think, no offence to McNulty, but he's obviously done something seriously wrong, or there's something well off with the kind of relationship that either he has with the club or the club have with him.
It's bizarre they're not even like, it's bizarre that he's fully out of the picture, which
I just find it crazy. And I think he came from obviously Coventry with a really good season behind him. And when he signed, I was like, this is a good signing for us. Like this is a really progressive signing. This is the kind of thing that we probably need to see more of. And it's just, you know, collapsed horrifically. I don't know what the situation is there. It's hard to feel sorry for him because I don't know what the situation is. So without, you know, being really cold, it's like, I don't know. I really don't know what's happened there.
Yeah.
So he will obviously go. He will just run down the clock on that one. I mean, we're not going to get a fee for him because everyone knows he's out of contract in a year's time. I mean, all of those, other than that, all of those players that you mentioned, because we're in a situation where if we are allowed to kind of sort players out and to spend money, does that mean then that the money's got to be prioritised in sorting out existing contracts to extend them? Or does that mean that that's kind of completely separate scenario for the club? It's very, very difficult, and that's a lot of negotiation. And I think certainly with Meite and, you know, potentially Swift, although he's kind of almost not at the end of his career, but different stage of his career, but certainly the younger players will be looking at it and thinking, well, hold on, Elise just got a deal with Crystal Palace. He's gone for 8 million. That could be me. So, you know, the club could be in a very difficult situation come January if those players are playing really well and they go, actually, do you know what? I've got suitors, the agents trying to talk to some Premier League clubs or European clubs or whatever. There's no point in me signing the contract. So I would imagine that they're going to have to get those contracts if they want to tie those players down, done very, very quickly. And I know there was obviously a bit from Pownoe in the week about talking to those players over the next few weeks and months, but that has to be a priority right now, because we could be in a situation this time next year when we've got like 10 registered players, which would just be an absolute disaster. I'm trying not to think about that too much at the moment. And I think if a gun was to my head and I had to choose, I'd say get the contract sorted, because at least then, if they have a stellar season, we could get some money for them. You know, obviously there's been a lot of chat about Loren and a little bit of chat about Holmes going to Forest, which seems a bizarre move for both players. But if we're getting money through the door, and that's another contract we don't have to worry about, you'd really worry about whether or not the club would actually, you know, forcibly resist those offers and those bids from Forest and potentially other clubs.
Yeah, I suppose to make it a bit of an extreme example, I would rather have 11 players who are really good tied down to long-term contracts than 30 players who are a bit average tied down to short-term contracts if it costs the same amount of money. So, yeah, I think prioritise getting them done. Especially clubs who are going to be bidding know that they're out of contract in a year. It's difficult. It's a real hard one for the club. And also, we haven't actually really spoken about the fact there's been a big old pandemic in the last year. The club's income has been absolutely shredded. It's going to make these are sort of things that makes a big difference. And it does sound like every contract is kind of having to go through the EFL, which, you know, we've got a bit of time, but it's not ideal. Final question then, Stuart, saying, which of the six new stadiums are you most looking forward to? Obviously, Reading fans can go to stadiums again this season, which is fantastic. Stoke away on Saturday, obviously about 1,000 tickets for that. So the new stadiums, obviously we've been to Fulham, West Brom and Sheffield United relatively recently. Peterborough, not been there since, I think, Brendan Rodgers era. Actually, no, Brian McDermott, we got beat at Peterborough, didn't we, in that season we went up. We had a 6-0 defeat at Peterborough as well, so we don't actually have a very good record there. But I think
it's a horrible place as well. No offence to people in Peterborough, but it's a horrible place. It's got kind of middle of nowhere as well.
Well, they've got a new stand. I think the away stand is no longer the kind of terrace that it used to be. So that's okay. Relatively new. It's not too far away. It's not great. It's not too far away.
It's not. I don't have good memories of going to Peterborough. So, no. I mean, even if the game's been awful or we've lost or whatever. So it's not somewhere that I'm rushing to get to this year.
Well, there's Blackpool as well. And they've finished their stadium now, which is brilliant because a couple of times I've been there in the past and they hadn't finished the stadium. So it's a bit of a trek. But yeah, there's Blackpool for, I suppose, if you want to turn that into a weekend and have Stag Do or something like that as well. I'll see the lights, maybe. And that's, I suppose, Hull, but we've been to Hull relatively recently. So I suppose, really, you can count Luton as a bit of a new stadium because while they've been up, we've not been able to go to the stadium yet. But otherwise, there's not really any that, looking across the league now, we can go back to the Ricoh Arena in a few weeks' time.
Yeah, that's what I was looking at.
Which is pretty convenient. That's not actually too hard to get to.
Yeah, and I think it'd be great for them as a club to get back. You know, must have been horrendous for them sort of moving around and not having a ground and stuff. So that'll be good for them, and hopefully they'll have a good atmosphere. I mean, Fulham's a great away day. It's such a good away day, really. And I know it's sort of local, but such a good part of the world. And, you know, Bournemouth's good. You know, nice little trip down to Bournemouth. But
yeah
I'm looking down the list as well. I can't really see anything that really sticks out.
Yeah, Fulham's a good, obviously, location, everything. You can end up with an absolutely awful view of the pitch. You can end up basically below the pitch if you're quite near the front.
Almost on the Thames, really. That's quite fun.
Yeah, they might have finished their stadium, I think, the end of the season they finish it or something like that as well. So yeah, there's Bristol City, Cardiff, always decent. Birmingham's not too far away. There's Ventes, Bournemouth, Millwall, if you can get over that side of London, QPR. There's a few, West Brom's not too far away, but there's a few decent away games on the agenda. Nothing, you know, as Stuart says, of the new stadiums, nothing I would say really, really can't wait to get out to. But, you know, it's the fact that we can actually go to away games again, which is in and of itself quite
very
fun.
Very true.
So, yeah, sadly, I'm not going to Stoke. I'm going to a wedding, but best of luck for those going up to the stadium on Saturday. We'll talk about that in just a bit, but let's do some news bites first and work out what's been going on around the club in terms of transfers recently.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by ZCZ Films. Remember, if you want to get involved in sponsoring the show, drop us an email to thetilehurstend@gmail.com.
So in terms of the players that are about to come, the news is that there isn't really anyone. I can't think of any players that have been like properly linked with the club recently. There's been some trialists. We've had Lazar, the left back, Edwards and Harris, the winger. Carl Edwards, former West Brom winger, saying that due to the circumstances, he can't or won't sign a deal. Those two, can't and won't, being very actually different scenarios to what he actually was, but we don't really know. And this is kind of the question that I want to talk about, Ben, is that there are two scenarios that we have at the moment. And obviously there's the scenario in which Reading can't do anything and that the Football League are blocking stuff and that's kind of answers itself in that, you know, there's nothing more to discuss after that. But it has been reported that Reading can do stuff. It's been reported that we have like maybe an £8,000 a week limit on loans and frees. And that's, you know, the trialists, we have seen that there is some sort of potential to do some sort of business. Now, how do you envisage the next few weeks playing out? Is it going to be a case, as I think, that it's going to be really late on all of the deals? We could be making 3 or 4 loan signings on deadline day. I mentioned earlier, Championship clubs not done much business so far. A lot of the free agents that were probably any decent went right at the start of the window when maybe the profit and sustainability things were holding us back more. Now, kind of post-Elise, we've got potentially a bit more wiggle room. I think that the free agents left probably aren't going to be that great. The loan players, we kind of need trickle down to happen a little bit. Paunovic was talking a bit about the domino effect of, you know, as big clubs sign players, then money moves down the pyramid and excess players that aren't needed get kind of shifted down as well. And Reading have to wait for that to happen. So the kind of summary is that maybe we do have a bit of money. Maybe the deals are going to come late because they're loans. Maybe the free agents are all pretty useless. And actually, even if we can sign free agents, is there much point? Do we want to sign free agents that aren't actually that good? Yes, bulking out the squad is brilliant, but we've talked about the club need to, you know, they need to learn lessons. They can't just keep signing players that aren't that great and then worrying where all our money's gone.
I think, you know, the best thing to do is to get us to kind of hire Pownoe like a Range Rover and just get him to drive up and down Bearwood so that all the reporters on the 31st of August or whatever can kind of jump in and, you know, ask him loads of questions about who's coming in, like Harry Redknapp used to do with his massive cars. That'd be quite cool. I think the deals will be late if there are any. I would say that probably Harris, having been there for what, week and a half, 2 weeks, I think he will probably get a deal now. I think obviously Edwards and Lazar, I mean, Lazar was bizarre. That rhymes, that's good. But he seemed a very odd fit and he didn't look very good at all in the West Ham game, but also the Charlton game. He just looked all over the place. So that there's no point signing those players, particularly him. So I was quite glad that didn't happen. Edwards, don't know, maybe he was holding out for Bournemouth. I'm not sure. But again, the fact he was on the bench for the Charlton game kind of said everything, really, because you know, there's no point having a trialist who's been there for sort of 2 or 3 weeks on the bench for those kind of games. I think realistically for us, you'd look to get hopefully 2 or 3 by the end of the month in on either loans or free agents. I agree with you in the fact that all the free agents that are probably worth having are gone. So you're looking at sort of other loans, and by the end of August, you know, Championship teams would have played, what, 3 or 4 games, Premier League a couple. So you'll start to kind of get an idea of how squads have formed. And, you know, at this stage of the season, there's loads of optimism. Everyone thinks they're going to play and all this sort of stuff. But, you know, come end of August and moving into the autumn, there's going to be players that are just sat around doing nothing. And that's when I think emergency loans will kick in. But honestly, I feel like January will be busier for us, because that will be when clubs are really looking to get rid of players and get players out on experience and things like that. And there are plenty of loan players that we could get from higher up on very cheap wages, just to give them some experience and give us a little bit of something, like we used to do with, like, you know, the Matt Upsons, you know, people like that used to come in and play for us and were fantastic. You know, Ryan Bertrand, he did the similar thing, didn't he, in the Brendan Rodgers era. So, you know, there's a lot of teams that will have players that are subject to requirements by then. And I think that's when we will look to kind of make a bit more of a move, and hopefully the financial fair play has kind of settled down a little bit, and things aren't relaxed so much, but, you know, kind of there's a bit more leeway to kind of get those players in. So I don't anticipate us being hugely busy between now and the end of August, but I would expect to see some sort of, you know, sounds very dramatic, but emergency loans in the autumn, and then kind of some more kind of longer term loans in January and towards the start of February.
Yeah, in terms of priority positions, what are we talking then? Left back, obviously, because we've only really got a kind of moved over centre back and a player who's never played it. I don't think he's played a league game yet in Ethan Bristow. Centre mid, potentially, we've only got Rinomata, Lauren and Tetek as kind of the obvious first choice players, with Swift maybe in another attacking mid as well, being Swift being one of the only central players, a winger perhaps. I'd say if you to limit it to three, probably an attacking midfielder, a winger maybe, and a left back.
Yeah, I mean, I think easy the one place we don't need is goalkeeper. I think that's probably the most well stocked we've been for a long time in terms of quality and potential quality. You know, Raphael Southwood and Boyce Clark, who sort of came back from the loan, didn't he, from Bath at the start of pre-season. So that would be fine. I think right now, without any injuries, then yeah, I would go 100% with what you said in terms of the left back and those other positions. I still feel like we need a bit more up front, but I think that would be largely dependent on whether Puskas, who's the most likely to leave in that department, goes. I don't think they're going to want to, I say, overstock it, because we can't be overstocked at the moment, but I don't see us bringing someone else in up front while he's still here. I think longer term, you just got to look at where those gaps need filling and where those injuries take place. I think as good as Moore and Morrison are, you have to worry or be a little bit concerned about potentially their fitness. Obviously, Morrison was out towards the end of last season. Moore hasn't stopped this off-season. Obviously, he's been away with Jamaica in the Gold Cup. So you'd think at some point, that kind of play will catch up with them, whether that's, you know, through fatigue or, you know, just to some sort of injury. But I think at this current moment, if we're looking at three or four, then it has to be those positions that you mentioned. Yeah.
Yeah, in terms of outgoings then, as you said, Josh Laurent and Tom Holmes have been linked with Nottingham Forest, supposedly a million or pound or whatever bid rejected for Laurent. And George Puskas has been linked with a move to Turkey. It's the only, you know, with no disrespect to Turkish football at all, but it's the only sort of place I can imagine him really going, because he's not going to go to a top five European league or anything like that. And any clubs that are, you know, in lower tiers in those divisions aren't going to, or in those countries, just aren't going to have the money to sign him. So are we worried about players being picked off in the next couple of weeks? You know, we've seen it before. I remember Ibrahima Sonko, when we got relegated, had a couple of good games back in the Championship, and Stoke swooped in and generally tends to not go that brilliantly for the clubs who sign them. But if for example, John Swift scores a brace against Stoke or whatever, yeah, it's not out of the world to imagine a Sheffield United level Championship team or a Norwich or someone like that coming in for him. I think in those sort of scenarios, we're probably just going to have to, you know, see how it turns out, because those sort of moves can go really quickly, can't they? And ultimately, Reading, and unless they can find a loan player or something like that, even if we get, let's say, £10 million for John Swift, I don't think that's going to be enough to then be able to turn around and go and get a £6 million replacement or something.
No, I mean, we've been victims of that before, haven't we? Obviously, you know, you mentioned Sonko, but Hector was the most bizarre one when he ended up at Chelsea, that transfer window, and it just came out of nowhere. I think realistically, everyone's on the block in terms of transfers, and I think, you know, the club will have to weigh it up, particularly those out-of-contract players, where, you know, if someone said, here's £3 million for Josh Laurent, they'd probably take that rather than lose him for free next year. I think if it's any lower than that, you've got to weigh up whether or not they can go, well, we'll keep him for a year and get what we can out of him and then let him go. It's a very difficult situation for the club to be in. Everyone knows the situation that we're in, which is why, you know, Crystal Palace came in and went, here's £8 million. That's what it says on his release clause for Elise, off we go. And the club couldn't go, well, actually, we want a bit more than that. They couldn't negotiate. And the players that you mentioned, as we've said earlier on in the podcast, is that they're all out of contract. So you'd look at it and the club would have to seriously weigh it up. But I just think anything above £1 million, I don't think they can turn it down. So it will be interesting to see how those players start. It will be interesting to see whether some of those clubs come in. I think Puskas to Turkey makes sense. And I don't say I want that to happen, because I think we need everyone we can get at the moment. But I think realistically, if they sort of turn around and went, here's £3 or 4 million, then that's a done deal. Potentially even lower than that. So it will be interesting in terms of how those players start and what other clubs feel they need to do before the end of the window as well, particularly those kind of mid and upper Championship clubs. I think a lot of the Premier League teams probably would have done a lot of the business that they needed to. So it will be intriguing to see how that unfolds. But from our point of view, I think it is really important that we try and get at least sort of two or three, maybe even four signings in before the window shuts.
Yeah, my final point is just that I think with the players who are out of contract, I think we'll stick to our guns a little bit more, because ultimately, you know, let's say Josh Laurent can have another amazing season and that gets us promoted. You can kind of either, you know, in an ideal world, you can then say, oh, here's another contract for a Premier League team, or you can actually just wish him well and say, well, we're a Premier League club now. We don't really need, you know, the players who got us here. We can do what we want. So it's a... I think it's a case of holding off a little bit, maybe, for the out-of-contract players. To bring in a bit of another sport analogy, is kind of what happens in baseball is you get halfway through the season, the trade deadline comes, and those teams that aren't competing just kind of get rid of half of the players that they have that are out of contract soon or you know, get good prospects in and sell them on, basically, because they know that they don't need those players. They know they're about to lose them anyway. So you kind of get what you can for them. And maybe that's what Reading will end up doing if they're lower mid-table by January or something. Just saying, you know what, we've got six players here. Let's make £20 million out of them and, you know, just kind of rebuild and accept our fate in a way. Maybe that's something that's going to happen. But we'll talk about Stoke in just a second. But before we do that, as regular listeners of the podcast will know, we kind of recap what's been going on around the club in terms of the other Reading FC teams. In news bites. So the women's team, hopefully be doing a bit more on the women's team this year. If you want to write about the women's team if you want to, you know, get involved in any way. There'll be hopefully maybe like interview opportunities or chances to go to cover games through the Tyne West End. If you want to do that through the website, absolutely get in touch. The thetylerstand@gmail.com. Obviously, the Twitter and Facebook's always open as well. But the women's team, they kick off in September against Man United. Their first home game at the Select Car Leasing Stadium / Madstad is against Arsenal on the 12th of September. Under-23s kick off on August the 16th against Newcastle. They're in Division 2 of the Premier League 2 again this year. And the under-18s are in the Premier League South. They kick off on August the 14th against West Ham. And the Reading FC men's senior team kick off on Saturday. Let's talk about that now.
There's another huge game ahead for the Royals. So be loud and be proud for the big match preview.
Usually, Stoke versus Reading at the Bet365 Stadium, I think it's called, is the 0-0 special. Doesn't tend to produce a lot of enthralling results. Let's do a couple of things about this then, Ben. The first thing, are we going to be going for another 0-0? Would we take that? And the second thing is, let's kind of name our starting 11 then. So starting with the result, I think just a kind of nice, steady, easy point performance is a pretty comfortable way to start the new season, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of away games in the league, Stoke's probably not a bad one. I think they're going to be a really interesting team this year because they've got a great coach in Michael O'Neill. You know, they've signed Brancic, who will be a good player for them. But there's very little expectation on Stoke this year. And I think with the way that their season could pan out with kind of the experience they've got, but also the fact they've been sort of under the radar this pre-season, really, I think they could be long-term a bit of a surprise package in the league. I think that, you know, from our point of view, it's so important that we get off to a good start. And I feel like we've got I feel like we're going to win. I feel like I have to say we're going to win. So I'm going to go 1-0 as my score prediction and result for us. But as away games go to start the season, very typical Championship game for us. And I think it's not as bad as any other start we could have had, really. So I'll go 1-0 and hope that John Swift will score the winner. Do I get extra points if he scores? Or does it not work like that?
Well, this is, as we were going to mention later on, the prediction league. Ben, you're jumping into the mix this year. I think it is the classic 3 points for the exact correct result, i.e. 1-0, and just a single point if you get the scoreline, I suppose, is 3 points, and then the result is 1 point. So if you get a 1-0 and it turns out to be 2-0 win, then you get a single point.
Okay.
So I think...
Well, I still think Swift will score the winner. Because I love him and he's amazing. And he's got a new haircut as well. So, you know.
Yes, he does. He's kind of, yeah, I don't know what. He looks like someone. I don't know whether it's someone famous or someone I just happen to know. But yeah, it does give me a couple of double takes before I have to really remember this John Swift now. Now he is kind of sans floppy fringe. But another word on Stoke.
He looks like a Championship medal winner in 21-22. That's what he looks like.
Well, yeah, I think I'm probably going to go for a 0-0 draw because that tends to be how it goes. Actually, you know what? Actually, no, I'm going to say 1-0 Stoke because I'm just thinking about, you know, how we've just been saying our squad is very thin and everything. Stoke have actually had a bit of renewal going on this summer. They've kind of got rid of a few of their veterans. John Obi Mikel's gone. Sam Vokes has gone. Got a bit of some of the wage bill loose and a little bit of Phobia and Otobo gone on loan. They've brought in a few, you know, they're signing Surridge from Bournemouth, Wilmot from Watford, and as you say, Vrantic from Norwich. Not bad players to sign. So, yeah, I think I'll probably go for a little bit of a pessimistic 1-0 defeat in terms of the prediction league. For a starting 11, then, who are you going to go? I say Raphael in goal is pretty much a shoo-in. Yeardon, Moore, Morrison, McIntyre, the defence, has changed that at all?
No, I think that's pretty much it. I don't think there's any other options, really. I do feel for Moore because, obviously, as I said, you know, he's played a lot of football, but in terms of the, you know, the back five, it's got to be those guys. Yeah.
And then are we starting Aziz in midfield? Rinomota, Laurent, presuming they're fit, I think is pretty much the obvious way to go. Swift in the centre, Ajari on the left, and then Zhao up front. And then I think that right wing spot, I'm kind of looking at the squad now, but unless Puskas is going to, you probably can play him in amongst it or as a 4-4-2 if you want. You might be able to put Yeardam onto right wing and play Holmes as a right back, although Holmes has got the number three position this year. So if Holmes is a right back, that will be an affront to humanity. But otherwise, I think it's pretty straightforward, and it does look like Aziz is going to get his chance.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's going to go too left field with this first starting 11. I think he's going to know the importance of playing the strongest possible team that he can, and also in terms of formation and how those players fit into it. So I don't think there's going to be any major surprises. I think the interesting thing will be who he puts on the bench and who he feels is in contention to come on and make a difference. And I think when we talk about lack of depth and maybe lack of experience and potential quality behind the starting 11, that's the problem, because you're always looking at the bench for kind of game changes, and that's what we didn't have last year, really. And I think we're going to have exactly the same this year, but we're just going to have a bit more kind of exuberance of youth to be able to mix it up. So, yeah, I think for me, the bench is going to be more interesting than the starting 11 and who we decide to kind of pick around the squad, really.
Yeah, it's a fair point. Just the last final point then, really, is that we've got Swansea in the Cup on Tuesday night, then Preston and Bristol City at home, Coventry and Huddersfield away. As starts go, that's about as reasonable as we possibly could have imagined, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. I think there's been a lot of criticism, a lot of kind of, I suppose, upset at the Swansea draw. But actually, that's a really good game to have at home, you know, small crowd against a team that will probably field a second string as well. And that's a really good opportunity to get more minutes into these youngsters and potentially try different things as well. So, you know, and if we have got loan signings in by then as well, that'll be a good opportunity for them to play, you know, sort of most of the game. So I think on paper, that's a really nice start. Bristol and Coventry, nice games to have. And hopefully we'll be looking at a solid start to the month, getting some points on the board and not looking sort of, you know, down the table.
Yeah, Swans is a pre-season friendly, isn't it? Let's face it, like the Carabao Cup, we're not going to, ultimately, if Reading get into the third or fourth round, we'll come up against the second string of a Premier League team who will then presumably beat us, because that's usually how these things go. So yeah, I think it's a good start. We've got Preston and Bristol City as two out of the first three games at home, I think is actually a really useful start. Three of four if you count the Cup. And then Coventry and Huddersfield, I think after that first six-game period, we'll have a pretty, you know, I don't think, you can't win it in that period, but if we do struggle in that period, then it will kind of, I think it'll be justified to be a little bit worried about how the season's going to go. I think even though my prediction says I think we'll start slowly, what I don't want to happen is to be sat here in November with Paunovic gone, and 2 points from the relegation zone and, you know, 12 or whatever from the playoffs, and realistically knowing the season's over in that sense. And I think that's just what I want to avoid.
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of the manager position, obviously we haven't talked about it really, and it's not been a massive talking point with the fan base this year, but I feel like he's earned the right to give it another go. I think he did incredibly well last year, regardless of what people say. No one would have predicted that. First season, no permanent signings. You know, very little squad, and he's managed to pull out seventh, and for a long time it looked like we were going to get in the playoffs as well. So, you know, I would be very, very disappointed come what may if he was removed or he resigned at any point during this season. I think we all know that we're not in for the kind of the same season that we had last year, and everyone's kind of realistic. But that said, if we're sort of, you know, 5 points adrift in December, and we're staring down the barrel of League One, then there will have to be changes. I just hope that's not the case and that he sees it through and that we were kind of able to build with him, you know, very positive guy. As I said, they're not going to need any sort of motivation from the team. They're going to want to go out and do the best they possibly can, either for themselves or for the club. It doesn't really matter at this stage in modern football. But, you know, the point is we have got potential, and, you know, some of those players now need to realise it and kind of kick on and do the best that they possibly can this coming season.
Christ, if we get rid of Paunovic in October, I don't know who's left. I think we'll be giving Bar McDermott another call if we get rid of Paunovic.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it runs out. You know, I mean, a lot of the good managers snapped up, aren't they? So, but again, you don't know how other clubs are going to cope with the start of the season. Saw last year that very few clubs got rid of their managers. Probably the lowest ever, I guess,
It's a bit wild, isn't it? I think it's up till Christmas. I think it's Lampard or something like that. It was one of the earliest, yeah. or if not the earliest. But yeah, I think that's a good thing. I think Reading will definitely benefit, even if we don't start brilliantly. You'd have to think that we'll benefit from holding off a little bit and giving Paunovic the time. As you say, I think he's totally on the right to do that. But this is Championship football. To rule anything out would be absurd, I think, especially at this point in time, which is probably the beauty of it in a way.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it is a great league. There was that great statistic, wasn't there, about the fact that there were more Championship players at the kind of the knockout stages of the Euros than like League One and La Liga and places like that. So it really is a great league. There's a lot of good players, fantastic managers. You know, teams with a lot of heritage, a lot of history, and teams that want to do well with very passionate fan bases. So, you know, it could be a lot worse for us at this point. But the important thing is that we manage to stay in this league and keep building and keep working towards the goal of getting back into Premier League, which is what everyone with the club connected with the club wants.
And we all start even as the first whistle commences. Thank you very much, Ben, for joining us on this episode of the Tarlesen Podcast.
Absolute pleasure. Great to talk to you, Mark. And let's hope for a win on Saturday.
And we will be back after the Stoke game to review the first game of the 21-22 season. It has come round again. The new football season is upon us. And as I say, it would be absurd to rule anything out for Reading this season. Who knows what awaits us? The only thing we know is that hopefully in the 150th year of Reading FC history, let's hope it's a fun one. Come on, you Arse.
You smile, funny how the